Hi, this is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
You are now on the inside of what I like to call the Circle of Trust. We are all connected in the great circle of life.
You know something, Bert?
What?
I think you and I are going in circles.
It feels like we're going in circles.
Circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
Because it's a circle.
Yeah, we heard about the circle.
Yes, we're familiar with shapes.
Hey, this is Greg.
And no Chuck.
Yes, and this is Dan, and we are talking in a little smaller of a circle, brought to you by Geekcast Radio Network. Yes, we are Chuckless this week, but Greg and I are holding down the fort. And what we're actually going to be doing is, in the second half today, as it being a little bit over halfway through 2016, we're going to be talking about our favorite comic books of the year so far. But before we get to that, Greg, how's the week been going with you so far?
It's been pretty good. A little sad that I'm missing out on San Diego Comic-Con this week, which when we're recording this, it just started last night on Wednesday night with a preview night, and it's been going on all day Thursday. I'm kind of sad I'm missing out on it. There's a whole bunch of Funko exclusive that I would love to get in on, but making it through. I still got New York City Comic Con that I get to go to, and the two others that are a little bit smaller, but I'm raring to go for cons. They're coming up and like for me, and I just can't wait. How about you, Dan? What have you been up to?
Not much. Really slow week for me. This is the time of year where my work gets kind of crazy, so my life gets dedicated to that mostly. But, you know, we talked about Pokemon Go last week, and yeah, I think I'm already over it. So I got to kind of stop.
Really?
Yeah.
That was a quick love affair, Dan.
It was. I'm not completely done with it, but, like, it's kind of annoying because I keep running out of the Pokemon balls, and there's not, like, a place for me to, like, refresh my balls. That's exactly. So there's no place to do that, and there'll be like things to catch, but I can't catch them. And then the servers for the site or for the thing are down. So when I do go to a place to like, oh, I know this is where a Pokestop is, the servers are down, so it doesn't work. So I've just been getting aggravated with it. So yeah, I mean, I'll still probably play a little bit, but I'm not as eager on it. And as I thought I would, and I had that feeling that it would happen, but you know, it's nature of the game. But
you were expecting later rather than sooner.
Exactly. Well, you never know. Maybe I'll catch up with it again if I go go sightseeing and there's a bunch of Pokestops to load up on my balls, and then we'll have that. But part of that too is like I ended up getting kind of addicted to something else. You know how addiction goes. One thing goes away and something comes replacing it. And it's one of Netflix's like new hit series, and I honestly never even like heard anything about it until, I just saw it on Netflix, and then suddenly now it's like everywhere, and it's their newest series, Stranger Things.
Yeah, I've like never heard anything since past like maybe a week and a half ago, and all of a sudden it's blown up, and that's all I really hear about. I don't know what it involves at all. I just hear that it's got Winona Ryder in it.
It does.
I believe.
Yeah. So I think it just debuted. I'm not sure when exactly it came out, but it was recently, and I think it picked up steam. It's one of those, Netflix shows, so it just kind of, it didn't really have the pedigree of, say, like, House of Cards, but, Winona Ryder is probably the biggest star in it. But it's basically, like if you took up all the genre films of the 1980s, put them in a blender, and added in some new spices, this would be the show. It is, like, I think Stephen King tweeted out, it's like a best hit novel of Stephen King, and he meant that in the best way possible. It's actually quite good. It's, it takes place in this, kind of small town. It almost reminds me of somewhat of E.T., the town. Then there's like two major storylines going on. You have a storyline involving kind of like kids, I would say, like Goonies age, kids, younger, and then like teenagers, and like you have their story, which is, and they kind of all intertwine about this strange thing that's happening, some sort of possible, I don't want to give anything away, but it delves into the realm of science fiction, has influences from like Nightmare on Elm Street to even Akira. Like it's insane all the different things that go into it. But in the first episode, it's not really a spoiler because it's in the title, A Kid Goes Missing, and then that becomes like, why did that happen? Where did he go? And that kind of sets off this type of, it's this mystery of like, what exactly is going on here? Is there government involved? What's causing all these strange things to happen in the town? And what's really like, what really kind of took me away, or sorry, one of the best things about the show is the casting or the actors in it. The kid acting is like amazing. It does remind me of Spielberg. It's what Spielberg was able to do is really then capture kids to make them feel like actual kids. The opening sequence is like them playing Dungeons and Dragons, and it does seem kind of pandering, but it feels
real. It's very like E.T.-ish.
Exactly. It feels very much like, okay, these seem like real kids, the way they talk. They, they feel authentic in that way. They all kind of have their unique personalities. Even like the way they look, sometimes I feel like with movie star kids, they all look like, they get like the cutest kid possible. It's, but these kids look like, normal everyday people, and acting overall is pretty solid. And it's enjoyable. I think the ending, I don't know, I wasn't completely satisfied with the way it ended. It was hard for it, everything to come together, but it was the ultimate slice of life of the 1980s. It reminded me a lot of like Super 8, but Super 8 that it wasn't nearly as derivative as Super 8, where Super 8 felt so much like a Spielberg film. This almost feels like it's its own thing, but it's certainly being referring to other things. It's certainly a product of a love affair with 80s genre films and genre TV shows, but it's not, I think, mooching off them so much that it doesn't become its own unique entity. And I love the score of it. It very much reminds me of like a John Carpenter or Michael Mann score with like the Sith soundtrack. It's quite good. I think you would enjoy it a lot. It's not necessarily like campy science fiction. It's a little bit more serious than that.
It sounds interesting from what you're saying, because I really enjoyed Super 8. If it falls kind of into that, and if you're saying it's kind of taken away from its downfalls, yeah, it definitely sounds something right up my alley.
Yeah, it's quite good. I would definitely recommend it. If you have Netflix, if you're geekier in the show, I think you would like it for sure. A lot of people have really been talking a lot about it. Like you mentioned, it's been everywhere. So my wife even liked it, and she doesn't really like that type. She actually, the one night I was like falling asleep, and she's like staying up finishing it. So. She was a big fan of it. She loves things of that nature, though. So, but talking about ghosts and things that go creepy crawly, and things about people and other things people can't stop talking about, you saw Ghostbusters, so I'm curious to hear what you actually ended up thinking about it.
Yes, not only did I see Ghostbusters, but I also saw this documentary on Netflix called Ghost Heads, and I would totally avoid it at all costs. It wasn't that great, Ghost Heads.
Is it better than that Back in Time documentary?
The Back in the Future documentary?
Yeah.
This is much worse than that.
Really?
Yes. It feels very amateurish. The production wise, I don't know why, it just felt like that to me. The people that they go over, they make me feel like a super cool nerd. It's just kind of agonizing to watch sometimes with the people that they have going on in here, which I guess I feel bad for saying, because it's kind of like judging other people's lives, it's agonizing to watch some parts with how nerdy some of these people are. And it's like, I kind of fit in the category with these people. And so I'm like, it was a bit of a train wreck to watch. It doesn't go over kind of like behind the scenes of the movies. It really just deals with the fans and different fans from different areas. Like you get Ghostbusters France, you get Ghostbusters New Jersey.
Have you seen Trekkies at all? Have you seen that documentary?
Trekkies was much better, I felt, production-wise.
Yeah.
Still agonizing to watch for the fans and seeing how nerdy they are.
Yeah.
I felt like that was much better done than this. I don't know why, but it just felt Like it was done so much better, but it's still agonizing to watch nerdy people and know that I'm a part of the fan base and everything. So I guess that's why it's excruciating for me. But there's nothing really there to be like, oh, I'm so glad I watched that. It's just like, yep, okay, I watched a documentary. It doesn't really fill any parts of your soul with like glee or anything. It's just like, all right.
I feel like all fandoms like have that, like, to the extreme person, like football fans with like the dude who goes shirtless at like 13 degrees outside with like it's just like, okay, let's step it down a bunch. But
like there's the one guy, and they had like these weird cartoons in the middle of it of this just the one guy. They didn't have it for anybody else. They just had a cartoon animated for this one guy, and he's got like this like brown splotch on his front teeth that kind of grossed me out, but he can't help it. It's been there for his whole life, I guess. And they animated that into the cartoon, which I thought was just plain weird. There was like a bunch of weird touches like that. They don't even really talk to the creators that much. Like, you got a little bit of Dan Aykroyd in there, and it's like he's just talking about the fans. It has nothing really to do about the movie. And from seeing at the end, they kind of show these dedicated fans of Ghostbusters. They kind of show the trailer and everything to them, and like this little sneak preview and everything, and they're like, oh, it's gonna be so great and everything. And now with going to see the movie, I'm like, you guys, you're probably so wrapped up in the nostalgia of it all that they don't even realize that it wasn't that good. The movie was not funny, and I think that's what they were mostly going on with this one. The original one, it was essentially three out of the four characters playing straight-laced, kind of every once in a while throwing in some dry humor, but then Bill Murray is the one that's really tossing the humor out in it. But this one, they have like a whole bunch of SNL comedy people, and so I think this one was mostly a comedy genre, and I felt like it was a big swing and a miss. There was maybe like two things that I laughed at, but I was in a theater with a lot of kids, and I kept hearing a ton of laughter from the kids and everything, and then I think some of the adults were still laughing. I'm not sure if it just wasn't my type of humor. It was very slapstick, but I felt weird about the humor in it, because if you're going to have this over-the-top humor, that kind of takes you out of the world a little bit. Then plus you're in a realm of ghosts and everything, so you've got this real slapsticky humor of like Melissa McCarthy with a proton pack flying all over the place trying to wrangle it down because it's way overpowered for her. And then you've got ghosts going on. It's just really taking you out of kind of a real life world that you kind of need to sink into for a movie. And the characters themselves were a bit over the top. Like, some of them need to be dialed back. I think Kristen Wiig needed to be dialed up just a little bit. Kate McKinnon was just going a little bit too eccentric with the role. Melissa McCarthy and I don't know the name of the girl that played
Leslie Jones.
Leslie Jones, thank you. But theirs was like way over the top, kind of screaming. They needed to be toned down a little bit. My brother was even saying, and I agree with him, you should throw Melissa McCarthy out, tone Leslie Jones down, but put somebody else in there that wasn't as high energy as Leslie Jones, because both the high energy from Melissa McCarthy and Leslie Jones with the screaming, shouting, the very physical humor, it was just too much. And I thought Leslie Jones was selling it much better than Melissa McCarthy. And Leslie Jones had one of the funniest lines in the film where I actually did laugh. All the other comedy in it, just kind of, I was sitting there going, okay, yep, that was supposed to be a joke. where they had a couple of serious scenes, I thought the serious scenes were really well done, and I wish it was a little bit more of the serious scenes, especially where Kristen Wiig's talking about her first experience with the paranormal. I thought that was really great. I love Chris Hemsworth, but he was definitely way too over the top. Dumb, how they were having him play. It was a bit too much with him. And the fact that before this movie even got into production, there was a lot of talk over the fact that the Ghostbusters were all going to be women now. And so I felt like they were really fighting against that during the movie, because they were harping on that they were all women and it was kind of like a girl power situation. There were definitely different times in the movie that they kept trying to sell that, like, women are the best, women are awesome, and that kind of stuff, where they were just jamming it down your throat. Which, okay, once or twice, okay, you could get away with that, but it was just a little over the top. And I feel like, not to get too deep on the subject, but I feel like that's done a little bit too much anymore, where it's so much feminism that it's making guys almost go to other side of almost being feminine with how much the ego is getting knocked down. Like, I understand here and there, and not to get like political or anything like that, or too preachy, but especially with this movie, it felt like it was demoralizing for men to kind of watch. I know they were fighting back, but like once or twice, okay, we get it and we can move on with the rest of the movie. But I felt like they were kept attacking that situation.
Then I guess the question, like, then is it, I guess you don't necessarily like hear that point with something like, you know, The Hangover very much, which is very much a bro movie, like Wolfpack type of thing. Like, yeah. Wouldn't that just be the equivalent of doing the same thing?
Well, no, because I think you've got your bro type movies like Hangover, but then you've also got your chick flicks, too. What was that one with Melissa McCarthy, and it was like all four women kind of going out? Yeah, and I don't think Ghostbusters is one that kind of falls into that kind of category. It's kind of a for everybody kind of film, if you ask me. Yes, it was four guys back in the day, but it was essentially I think two or three guys with their friends that was coming up with the movie, essentially. So it just, that's how it kind of happened to be. I don't think it was like thinking about, oh, we should have got a woman in here or something. But also they weren't harping like, yeah, there's no women on the crew or anything like that. And this very much felt like, yeah, there's no men on this crew. We don't need no men. For example, in the commercial for the movie, they have Leslie Jones do a stage dive and nobody grabs onto her. They just let her fall. But in the movie, you see that Melissa McCarthy does the stage dive. People grab her and she does the fan surfing and everything. But Leslie Jones' line is, I'm not sure if it was a black thing or a woman thing. And it's like, well, they just caught the other woman, Melissa McCarthy. So, like, why do you even need to make that statement? Like, okay, if you want to say the black thing, I guess, but and there were other points where they were definitely trying to sell it. And I'm running a blank in my head of other things. Like they shot the final baddie in the junk, and so there was a bunch of stuff like that, and it was just a bit too much over the top. Where it came a blaring obvious thing for me, and I don't want to go too much onto that.
Yeah, but I guess I don't know. To me, I guess I feel like we as guys, we may have issues with that, but there's a lot of stuff that are done in guy movies,
yeah,
and the way women are portrayed, and the fact that there are very little. Like, you ever hear of the Bechdel test, which is like, basically, at, you know, the task where it's like, are there two women on screen that are talking to one another and talking not regarding other men? And nearly like 90% of movies fail that. So I think it's okay if you have a movie that is one of the rare films that is a major blockbuster that's female centric, and they do kind of, maybe there's a balance you need to strike, but I don't have an issue if they...
Yeah, I'd rather them strike a balance than go one way or the other. Like, I could see, like, yeah, maybe we don't need the bro movies, but, like...
I guess my response to that would be, then why don't we get that complaint with the bro movies? It's like, well, why aren't they striking a balance?
Sure, people can complain about that. I guess, me being a guy, I guess I could allow it to go a little bit more, but especially with the fight at the beginning of this movie that they're...
I mean, I'm saying this as someone who doesn't watch it, so I have no idea how it's portrayed. So I'm just trying to play devil's advocate.
Yeah, I don't have a problem one way or the other. Woman power, guy power, black power, white power, Asian power. I don't give a shit who you are. I just don't like being...
Care bear power.
Yeah, exactly. I don't care if you're one way or the other. Well, I don't like racist people or anything like that, that kind of shit. But it's just, I don't like being sold something way over the top. That always bugs me. And this was kind of being sold way over the top, yay feminism kind of situation. And that wasn't even the main part of the movie or anything. It was just like kind of brought up every once in a while, so it kind of bugged me, but whatever. I thought the villain was kind of cool. I thought the ghosts when they did like Slimer, like the stilt guy, and the final the balloons, the Macy's Day balloons, I thought those were kind of cool. And I thought the final ghost was cool, Rowan's ghost, which was, spoiler alert, which was the Ghostbusters emblem ghost in there kind of come to life. I thought those were all really well done. And then I thought, since they did those and they were like these really neat looking designs and everything, to see the other ghosts going on where they're just like... translucent, got a mist going on, and they've got like this neon blue going on. I thought they weren't very original compared to all the other stuff that they had going on in the movie. So I wish that it was more creativity kind of going on with the ghosts, and that they were sticking more to that that Slimer, Stay Puft Marshmallow Man feeling going on. Like, they definitely, I thought they hit it home with the Rowan's ghost. My brother didn't care for it too much because he thought it should have been Misty, but I thought it was kind of cool because it did look like this really old, weird cloth situation going on, and how it kind of like when he smashed a cab with his foot, there was like the cloth kind of stuck to the taxi cab a little bit. Had this little grossness to it. He didn't care for it too much because he said it looked like a person in a costume, so kind of Godzilla style to him. But I thought it was kind of cool and kind of struck back to the old Ghostbusters. Next, right?
It's like Stay Puft Marshmallow Man versus the Godzilla.
That'd be pretty neat. I'd watch that. Stay Puft Marshmallow Man would probably go down pretty quick. I love the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, but he would go down pretty quick because he's just delicious, and I'm assuming Godzilla has a sweet tooth. But it was better than I expected, but it still wasn't up to par. There were a lot of cool appearances by the old cast members.
I've heard mixed things about the cameos.
Bill Murray, I felt like, was just phoning it in, which was terrible to see because I love Bill Murray. Dan Aykroyd, I feel like anything anymore, he's always phoning it in anymore, which I feel sad about because I love Dan Aykroyd. And they had a gold bust of
Ernie Hudson.
No, Ernie Hudson was at the end. I thought he had the best appearance, and I think he had a funnier line of the movie. I thought Ernie Hudson was great. Annie McDowell, I think that's her name. Her appearance was okay. What's the other?
Sigourney Weaver.
Sigourney Weaver was a little strange. And then the last Egon, who passed away a couple of years back. I forget
Rick Moranis?
No, not Rick Moranis. That would have been awesome if he was anywhere near that. That would probably would have just been up because nostalgia and haven't seen him in years. It was the guy who played Egon Spengler, and he passed away a couple of years. And so they had like a gold bust out in the hallway, which I almost missed him. Like in retrospect, like a couple seconds after his bust was on the screen, I'm like, wait a minute, that was supposed to be Egon in the background.
Harold Ramis, not Rick Moranis.
Harold Ramis. Yes. Harold Ramis.
Rick Moranis isn't still living. He's just stopped acting because his wife got sick
and passed away. Unfortunately, because that also sucks with her passing away, but also sucks that we don't get to see Rick Moranis anymore. There was something else I wanted to mention too. It just passed through my mind in one quick second, and I forgot.
So I know we talked about like how awful the new song was. Was it actually used in the movie, or was it just saved?
There was a lot of the older songs riffs on that, and then it was just like a quick, maybe 30 seconds use of that song. So it kind of passed by quick, and it was like, whew! That was good. We passed by that one real quick. All right. It was kind of like pulling off a Band-Aid real quick. Like, it hurts, and then it's gone. Okay, we're good. We could breathe a little bit. So, otherwise, it was okay. Like, I would have liked to seen more serious scenes. The jokes really didn't connect with any other jokes. They just kind of felt like little loosely based little skits kind of going on to add a little bit meat to the bones. It didn't feel like there was a lot of story written for it. It was just like, okay, here's the basis for a story. And then you ladies go out there and riff on this other stuff. And their riffing was terrible.
Do you think it would have been better, like, with this being a reboot, or would you think it would have been better if they just did, like, a sequel series?
Oh, okay. That was the other thing I wanted to say. The weirdness of Dimension, like, it's definitely a reboot of the situation. But then they kept bringing back stuff from the old one, like Hook and Ladder, kind of referencing that. And so that kind of made it feel weird. But yeah, I think it's character based where the problem is, and not rebooting. I think if you had different characters and actors that could whip out a better comedy. I'm saying like it's easy, and I've never done it, so I can't really. But I felt like it's more like they should have just had better comedians in there, somebody to throw in better jokes if they wanted to go that comedy route. I felt that would have made it better, and I wouldn't have cared if it was a reboot or a third movie to sequel kind of situation. I think it was more that they needed the right bones in a story and the right actors, actresses, whoever, mixed race, mixed genders, whatever. I think they just needed the right people, and I don't think they really had the right people, the right portrayal of characters, the right tone and everything. So it was a lot of different stuff on. So I'd want to get that right before deciding whether it should be a reboot or a sequel.
That's great comedy sounding, great characters. So if the characters aren't working, because I mean the original, that was what made it great, were the characters. The story itself isn't anything all that phenomenal. No. It's just, you know, it is what it is. But it's, I mean, a lot of it is great because of, you know, the power of Bill Murray. So
yes.
So I think that's a big reason why. I
mean, yes. And then you had Harold Ramis was playing awesome, so straight and so scientist with a stick up his butt, that was great. And that you always have to have a great straight man with a great comedian to kind of make things work. And there was no really straight man in this movie.
That's a key, I think, too. I mean, I think probably what helped the original too is like those guys, they all, like, they were, you know, friends for quite a while, you know, they like knew each other. I think they had
except for Ernie Hudson. Winston again, who Ernie Hudson, who
is great.
I wish I could see Ernie Hudson in more things. He was like his small little part. He did great with that. I thought he was one of the greatest of the original cast coming back in to do something in here. He was great in Congo. He was great in a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the big failures of the original, I think, is the Winston character is kind of just given the short he's just like given nothing to do, which I guess originally it was supposed to be Eddie Murphy, but he canceled last minute, so like they ended up like rewriting a lot of that or reshooting it or whatever. But yeah, so I think that was helpful too, because I think Dan Aykroyd, to get it, like, can be the wacky guy or he can be straight, like he has like a range there.
Yeah, like he was great in Trading Places, and he was great when he was playing Ray Stantz in the Ghostbusters. But his cameo in this movie was kind of terrible because he was trying to do this weird character thing. I don't know. It was just bizarre. I could have done without him. It wasn't Annie McDowell. It was I forget her name. I'm sorry. But her character, she had some weird situation going on too that was just bizarre.
Yeah, interesting. I'll probably wait. I'll wait to see if it hits, you know, DVD whatnot.
On Netflix or something. That's more the way to go if you want to see it. Like I said before in other episodes, I felt obligated to go see it because I was a fan back in the day. I knew it was going to be terrible. It was slightly better than I thought it was going to be, but it was still pretty bad.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's getting a mixed reviews for sure. It's like 70% in Rotten Tomatoes, and pretty much what I hear is like it's good. I mean, it's what I kind of figured with like a Paul Feige film, because he did like I feel most of his movies are they're fine. They're there. They are where they are, and they're not amazing. I mean, I really like Bridesmaids, but like Spy.
That was the other movie I was trying to think of before is Bridesmaids, with our whole talk about gender.
Yeah, like I really like Bridesmaids, but like Spy was okay. It was better than I expected, but it wasn't anything fantastic. The Heat was, you know, fine. And
by the way, I find it very weird that he now has a Funko Pop.
Like, really?
He's the first. Yeah, he's apparently the first director to have a Funko Pop figure.
Really? I would think like Spielberg or like
Hitchcock
or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I find it weird.
Like, I couldn't even pick him out of a crowd. Like if you gave me a picture of him, I wouldn't even know. Like, why is there a?
Well, they have him like. Yeah, it's a guy very finely dressed in this pinstripe suit with this purple dress shirt and this like umbrella situation going on. So it's
weird.
Yeah, it's very bizarre.
All right. Well, anything else before we take a quick break?
No. I think I'm talked out. I felt like I talked way too much about Ghostbusters.
Hey, you know, now it's finally out, so people can talk about it and not like, you know, everything else regarding it. So that's
speculate.
At least. Yeah, it's kind of funny though, because there's all this like everything about it, like all this like hubbub, and it ends up making like $40 million, which is like, you know, it's good, it's not great, and it's like it's just like this movie that ended up being meh, it's fine, and it was just all
it
that.
It probably made its money back, I'm assuming.
It will. It'll probably make enough for a sequel. I don't know if.
Yeah. Well, I also heard that even before this came out, that they're gonna do a version with all guys, and it's like seriously, what? Just pick out a good cast. Don't get, okay, we're going to do a girls and a guys. Just pick out a good cast. I don't give a shit if it's a girl, guy, black, Asian, guy with blue balls constantly going on the whole time. Just give me a good cast.
I think, well, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about different things going. They talked about doing like a crossover with 21 Jump Street. So who knows? There's a lot of things out there. We'll see. We'll see. But, well, when we come back, though, we'll be switching into a new topic as we look at our favorite comic, as we look at our favorite comic books that come out this year so far. But we'll get to that in just a bit, right after these messages.
Hey guys, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Every week on our show, you can join my co-host Brendan and I as we review the latest films that's out in theaters. It also inspires us to discuss a top three list of some sort, and we have a lot of other fun movie discussions as well. It's always a blast. And we also have a show on Fridays called our Extra Film Podcast. This is a show that gives us the space to talk about the latest indies and art films and other classics that we normally just don't get to talk about on our main show. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and more. In fact, you can just see everything about us, including our social medias, at InSessionFilm.com. So join us every week. We'd absolutely love to have you.
All right, and welcome back. Yes, 2016, you know, a little, actually more than half over now. And Greg and I thought, you know, we have some time with to talk about some of our favorite comics that come back, that have come out so far this year. It's a little bit more difficult of a list, I think, for me to put together than maybe movies because of the way you consume comics. But, Greg, overall, you know, how satisfied? There's been a lot going on in the world of comics this past year. We had the hubbub over Captain America. You had the DC Rebirth, all the movies. So far, over, you know, now before we get to the top five, how are you feeling about the world of comics for 2016 as we stand right now?
Happy enough, like there's the big two, which we call it, publishers, and I found that I definitely favored the one over the other, and the other didn't even really make it onto my list. Which this is kind of a spoiler. It's one of the ones I haven't really read that much of, so I found that to be completely bizarre. So. Yeah, it's definitely a different world out there when it comes to comic books and titles. And I feel like the indie publishers are definitely higher on my list than the big two at this point.
Yeah, I'm about the same. I will say that I have not read any really of DC Rebirth. I read the first, like the 86-page, you know, one-shot. But I haven't read anything else besides that. I was kind of going to give it a few issues, see what people are saying are the best series, and maybe pick it up and trade. So if people are like, where's Batman Rebirth? I just haven't read it yet. There's also some comics I didn't include because they didn't have they didn't have enough issues out.
Yeah.
Like, for example, my favorite comic right now probably is Southern Bastards from Image and Jason Aaron. And I love that series, but it's only had two issues so far this year. So I'd be like, it's not, I don't know if it's really a fair for a thing to rank it.
Yeah, I have a couple on here that it's like, it's just maybe max of four, but it's got either a complete storyline going on. It was just a mini series. And then the other one, it hasn't had a chance yet, but it was just so good. I had to add it onto my list.
Very cool. All right. Well, with that said, why don't you kick us off, Greg, with your number five?
Sure. Number five is, I think, a creator who both Dan and I really enjoy and has really this unique style that I really enjoy. And this is his first own writing and artistry possession, and it's I Hate Fairyland by Scotty Young. He's done Rocket Raccoon. He's drawn Wizard of Oz. He's done a Magneto miniseries. He's done a lot of covers and stuff, very cartoonish style, very graffiti style. And I got a little a summary here from, I believe I got it from the Image website. Superstar Scotty Young, Rocket Raccoon, Wizard of Oz, makes his Image debut with an all-new series. The adventure time slash Alice in Wonderland style epic that smashes its cute little face against Tank Girl slash Deadpool-esque violent madness has arrived. An adventure that ain't for the little kiddies unless you have a super cool parents, then whatever. You'll meet Gert, a six-year-old girl who has been stuck in the magical world of Fairyland for 36 years and will hack and slash her way through anything to find her way back home. Join Gert and her giant battle axe on a delightful blood-soaked journey to see who will survive the girl who hates Fairyland. It's just a great story. You've got this awesome fusion of the super kiddie Fairyland world mixed with this very hyper violence that makes an interesting blend, I believe, with Scotty Young's unique style and definitely his unique tone that he's got going on. It's super, like, very colorful, like very girlish Fairyland situations, and I just think it's great and humorous the way that those two styles have kind of mixed together. And I've always been a fan of Scotty Young's artwork. I have a awesome 90s Cyclops up on my wall that he had on his blog a couple years back now that I was able to get. So he is number five on my list with I Hate Fairyland. By the way, I numbered all of these, so it's going 5-1, people.
Wow, that's a very special episode. It might be the first time in Talking in Circles history.
I think it is. It's a rarity.
So yeah, actually, I it was very difficult not putting in this my top five, but I do love this series. Actually, TFG when Mike from Geekcast Radio and I have been we talked about this in two episodes of The Pullback, so you can check those out. And yeah, I'm pretty much will just say ditto to everything you were saying about it. It feels like the comic book that Scotty Young was born to write and draw. The colors on it, like the thing that always comes to my mind are just like the colors. I remember last week you talked about like Sherbert into the eyes of what that looks like. It's kind of like that, but in a good way. Yes. I love, you see a lot of influences. It has like almost like a Ren and Stimpy feel at times.
Yeah.
It's just unadulterated fun. And it's, you know, a concept I think wouldn't usually work more than an issue or two, and it's been great so far, and it seems like the second arc is... Go ahead.
Yeah, they just started the second arc, and the second arc so far is pretty cool. He realized quick he put Gert in a situation where she's not really meant to be, so he's instantly fixing that with issue number 6 in the series.
Yeah, so... It's continuing to go much more than I thought it was. I thought it'd be like a nice little miniseries, but it seems like it might have a pretty long life. So it's great. Like, it's amazing. I saw Scotty Young tweet out something about like how people ask, like, how can he continue doing the style he does? Like, that's not super dark. But then he's like, well, why don't people who have super dark styles get the same type of like question? Why is it like, why can't I do my style the way I like it? And I'm okay if he continues doing this because I love it. It's just... It's insane in the right way.
Yes.
So, all right. Great choice there, Greg. For my number five, I'm also going to go with another indie publisher. I'm going to go with one from Boom Studios, actually. A publisher, I think, that does not get nearly the love it deserves. We talked about... it's got... I don't know if this is on your list. Maybe it will be, but this one's not on mine. But, you know, they probably got huge notoriety right now for the Mighty Morphin Power series.
Yes, which I'm currently enjoying, and it is not on my list, but it is definitely up there so far. I'm waiting to see how this one pans out a little bit more. It's good, but doesn't have quite enough on its run and enough quality to it yet where I think it should be on a list like this.
I agree. I think it's enjoyable, but it's not like, you know, it's a... licensed property done pretty well, but I don't think I wouldn't go beyond that. But a series from them that I actually quite like a lot, and I really, they have a lot of really great small noir miniseries, and one of my favorites, they had the Last Contract that came out this year that was about like an aging Clint Eastwood type of hitman, but the one I ended up going with was actually one called Snowblind. It's written by Ollie Masters and written by Tyler Jenkins. And the story behind it is it follows this one kid who kind of finds out that his family is not what it seems to be. He lives up in Alaska, and through a series of unfortunate events, as often happens, he finds out kind of why they're living there, and it may not be what he expected it to be. I love the art style. It has that. It's a great dichotomy of this classic noir style with these, you know, obviously white backgrounds, these snowy landscapes. So it's, you know, it's a unique atmosphere for a noir book like this. And it's a familiar story, but it's not derivative in that way. I find it quite interesting, the very good mystery and enough twists and turns that you kind of don't know what it's expecting. And I'm a huge fan of noir, and I always like seeing it taken in a different direction or put in a new different format that I'm not expecting, and this is it. So it's a very, like, I would say rough animation style, but in a good way, where it just it has that gruffness you would expect for a noir movie, and ended up quite enjoying it. So it's only 5 issues. I think it's only a miniseries or 4 issues. I think it ended a few months ago, but it's quite good. I would highly recommend it. So that's my number 5, Snowblind.
Cool. I saw that one when it came out. I didn't pick it up. It looked interesting, but I don't know. There was something about it that I didn't bite.
Yeah, if you're not a huge fan of like crime stories, I don't know if there's that much appeal. But for me, I quite enjoyed it. So, all right, Greg. So number 4 you had, or sorry, number 5 you had Hyatt Fairyland. So what do you got next on your list?
Number four is actually one of the big two, and it's a title that I just recently got into. Not that long ago, I got it mid-run through, but everybody was talking so much about it, and especially the artwork and the design of the main character. And the main character is Batgirl, and this title is Batgirl. This is the Batgirl of Burnside series, and I got from the DC website, and it's from one of the graphic novels. I think it's the second graphic novel. The summary is, Barbara Gordon is no stranger to dusting herself off when disaster strikes, so when a fire destroys everything she owns, she spots the opportunity for a new lease on life and seizes it. Following the rest of Gotham City's young adults to the hip border district of Burnside, Barbara sets about building an all-new Batgirl and discovers new threats preying on her peers. As the new hero of Burnside, Batgirl gets started by facing twin sister assassins on motorcycles. That collected apparently Batgirl number 35 to 40. Art was by Babs Tarr and written by Brendan Fletcher and Cameron Stewart. I believe Cameron Stewart also helped out with the illustration. But the artwork is definitely this cartoony kind of style. I believe somebody harkened Babs Tarr's that's a tongue twister, her art style to a little bit more on the anime manga side. I don't really know about that because I don't really read any of those or watch any anime. But it's definitely this very unique style, and I think the character designs of Barbara Gordon's new Batgirl of Burnside is definitely this really awesome look that she's got going on. And I definitely enjoyed the more modern take that they've kind of given her. They've kind of euthanized, because that's killing people.
They were not fans. It's like, I know they talked about doing a reboot, but like, come on now, that's seems to be a little harsh.
They kind of younged her up a little bit. And so it's kind of added this new generation kind of style to her and everything. And you've got these fun new villains going on, and like these weird, strange new villains that she's going up against. And especially this last one that I talked about. And I forget the name of the villain yet again. But that was a very cool, because Barbara Gordon has this kind of photo memorization kind of thing going on, where she, like, it's like taking a photo and the photo is stored in her mind and she could remember just about everything. And this last villain was really fucking around with her mind, where it's even going down the road here now, she kind of has to question what's going on in her mind and everything. And I just thought it added this awesome cerebral quality to the comic, and there was definitely this technology thing going on and everything. So I thought it was a real cool take on the character of Batgirl, and that's why I put her in at number four.
Nice. Yeah, I've only read a couple issues of that, but I've enjoyed it. Yeah, I see the different tone they went. It's like the kind of the much as much opposite as you can get from like a traditional dark tone Batman movie or Batman comic than that. It's like, you have Dark Knight Returns on one end and then Batgirl. But it works, I think. It lets it differentiate itself from it.
Yeah, she's a lot more fun. She's a younger, fun-loving girl. And so this is more portrayed in it as opposed to the Barbara Gordon of old, where she was just kind of nerdy but athletic.
Yeah. It's like the tone of Teen Titans in a way, I guess, or Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, which not on my list, but actually a book I like a lot. I mean, I don't know what that's about.
Read.
I mean, but I love the humor of it. I think it's great. I actually quite like it. It didn't make my list, but it's a very enjoyable read. So, I would highly recommend that as well, but it's not on my list. But you know what is on my list? Again, going to a different publisher, going to another indie publisher, going to IDW this time, and going with a horror comic. And I'm kind of getting into horror comics almost more than I'm getting into horror movies. And it's coming from the writer James Tynion IV, who has done a lot. He's done some Batman stuff, the Wood series for IDW for Boom. But this is for IDW, and it's The Eighth Seal. I don't think this has got much buzz, much talk about. I ended up just picking it up and seeing what it would be like. The covers kind of got to me. The covers are like... this guy, they look like almost I don't know, like an alien-esque where you see this being kind of taking over the body of a human person, or taking this like alien creature type of thing taking over a human body, and it's really deformed, and like the artwork is kind of very dark in a way. And the way I would describe it, it's almost like Species and Evasion of the Body Snatchers. It centers on the president's wife, the first lady, and she's having these visions, and the question are of, you know, these creatures, and that's the way it starts. The question is, like, are they real? Like, what's going on? Is she being controlled? Is there mysterious forces going on? Basically, the short description of it is a woman's visual nightmares bleed into reality as the struggles to live in a political spot. The first lady's visual nightmares bleed into reality as she struggles to live in the political spotlight. Is she losing her mind? Or do these visions have some darker truth? And it kind of goes, it gives you that idea, like what's real, what's fake. It gets into that, you know, that talking about like Stranger Things has a similar tone to it. I love the artwork. It's, especially when you see these monster creations, it's just, I don't know, just the combination of Jeremy Rock is the guy who, the artist, and Tinian's like imagination. It's quite incredible. And I don't know, I guess maybe when I went into the series, I didn't have much expectations. I was actually taken by it quite a bit. Maybe like the small political aspect of it grabbed me more than I thought it would. But I think it's like, again, similar concept, but I thought it's handled pretty well. And one I would again recommend, it's again the Eighth Seal. I'm not completely up to date with it. I think I'm a issue or two behind, but everything I've read so far, I'm quite impressed with. And I've enjoyed most of Tinian's stuff. Like, I really liked his Batman, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle crossover. I don't know if you read that.
I haven't read it. I've heard good things, though. I've also read other things by him that have not come into mind, but I've definitely heard the name before.
Yeah. I wouldn't say he's, like, a top echelon writer, but he occasionally puts out some really good stuff, and I think this is an example of it. And
cool. I've never actually heard of the Eighth Tier, I think you said it was.
The Eighth Seal.
Seal, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
It just, I saw it on a solicitation and like, yeah, that looks like it could be good. And you know, I was looking for something a little bit different. And if you're a fan of horror comics, and you know, I know Image has a bunch.
Dark Horse has a couple, like Caro County, which is very acclaimed. There's Witches by Scott Snyder, which was a really interesting take on witches. Yeah. Not sure that I really understood all of it, but that was an interesting thing too.
They had another one called Negative Space, which I loved. It only had like two issues this year, which is why I didn't include that. But that was a great series too. But yeah, that's all right. What's next?
Very cool. Greg?
Next on my list is another of the big two, and it's one that you're all probably expecting because I've talked a lot about it this year, I believe, and that is Harley Quinn, written by the amazing Amanda Connor with help from Jimmy Palmiotti. And there's a whole list of other artists that kind of come in to do the art details. There's Chad Harden, Stefan Rowe, who's going to be at Baltimore Comic Con, and I'm hoping I could get something from him. Alex Sinclair, Paul Mounts. So there's definitely a changing of the guard all the time on that comic. The summary for it is, fresh from Batman, Death of the Family, and Suicide Squad, Harley Quinn returns to her first solo series in the New 52. The writing team of Jimmy Palmiotti, All-Star Western, and Amanda Connor before Watchmen, Silk Spectre, unleashed Harley in an unsuspecting DC universe as she encounters various heroes and villains and leaves no one unscathed in her wake, with art by blah 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 slew of artists. But Harley Quinn is amazing. I kind of went from Spider-Man to Deadpool because Spider-Man was kind of getting emo and everything, and now I feel like Deadpool for me has been kind of getting slogged down with this whole family situation that he's got going on, deciding whether he's good or bad or whatever, and I feel like now Harley Quinn for me has kind of taken over that spot in comic form of kind of a comic relief, good time, never know what's going to happen. But then Amanda Conner adds this whole bit of a little bit of sexuality into it with the sexiness of Harley Quinn character, but still being respectful of all the lady stuff. And I just think it's so crazy and unexpected of what's going to go on. And it's just got this great amount of fun to it. And violence. There's always got to be a little. I guess I'm a very street and violent type of violence kind of appeals to me in comics, movies, and the such. But yeah, Harley Quinn is definitely done really great things, especially with I believe a couple podcasts ago. Dan and I were talking about the issue where she actually confronts her ex of Joker, and that was like one of the best single issues that I think I've read of the entire year, where she confronts the Joker and kind of lays down the law.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring that up. Like, I think it's Harley Quinn 25, where she's in jail, where she's like breaking into a jail, and
To break out her new love interest, and she confronts her old love interest.
Yeah, and the Joker and that confrontation was amazing. It was
Then the added bonus is the conversation between Harley and Batman at the end of that as well. It was really spectacular.
Yeah, I agree. Like, if I was just ranking like my top individual issues for the year, Harley Quinn 25 would be probably like one or two. It like, and I'm not even a huge Harley Quinn fan, but it was just that what that like situation did just for that character on so many different levels. I think it really humanized her. It showed that she had power as a character. Like, she wasn't like a sidekick anymore, and I think it did a lot.
Girl power done right.
Exactly. Very true. Very true. All right. Very good. Like, again, that series I enjoyed, but I am not caught up enough to feel like I could properly put that on my list.
And I'm hoping to get more stuff signed by Amanda Conner. She was very awesome to go up to at the Baltimore Comic Con last year and get stuff signed by her. We had a nice little conversation back and forth with her. That was also talked about in another older podcast that we've done.
The Baltimore Comic Con episode, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
But next for me is actually coming from it's a comic book legend, really, comic book heavyweight, but from an unexpected publisher with Aftershock Comics, which I think is only like a year or two old. They're not very.
Yes, it's just brand new in the publishing world. I believe it's the first I've seen of it that name.
They've got a couple good series so far. Second Sight, I enjoyed American Monster. I've liked a lot, but
I think they have Black Eye Kids out too, which I read the first issue and I wanted to pick up the second, but that just haven't found that one on the shelves.
I've not read that one, but the one
it's a very interesting premise.
The one I have on my list is actually, I guess, looking at my list, I feel like it says less about comics and just more about my personal taste. But that's, I guess, the way it is when comics, you have so many choices to choose from. But it's Dreaming Eagles from Garth Ennis. Garth Ennis has a ton of different comic books based on like military, you know, aviation in general. But I think Dreaming Eagles might be his best one. You know, he had it for one of the main reasons where the focus of it really isn't even on the aviation concept, really. It's the Dreaming Eagles were like a brand of African American. It's almost like this Tuskegee Airmen. And it starts because it's this conversation. It takes place, the main story takes place like during the 1960s, during the civil rights kind of movement. And it's this father and son talking about basically, you know, how they feel like they should change the system and make it for the better. And, you know, they're kind of talking about their lives and what they're going through. And it's just showing, you know, what's going on during that time. And then the father, who was in World War II, like his story of being in the aviation, being a fighter. So it has a lot going on to it. I mean, the fight scenes themselves are great, but I think it's tackling a lot and doing it in a very intelligent manner. It's not, you know, it's not going back to what we talked about. It's not being preachy. It's just trying to examine the ways in which different people at different times go about doing things, and it's intriguing. And it's I'm a huge fan. I enjoy World War II history a great deal. Like, my dad is I know, grew up on aviation. He's a former, he was a member of the Air Force, so we grew up talking about all types of planes, and we went to air show after air show, World War II weekends, and it's we went to a lot of different things. So I'm already kind of pre-programmed to like something like this, but I just think it has a lot going on to it. It ended up, it ended up surpassing my expectations because I just thought it would be another Garth Ennis book about military aircraft, but it ended up being a lot more than that. So again, it's called Dreamin' Eagles. It's out by it's another Aftershock book, so quite good for me. It's my number three. So
very cool. I think I've heard of that one, just never really looked into it because kind of used to Garth Ennis's style, and nothing he's done in the past couple of years have really struck home for me.
Yeah, he's kind of hit and miss. He had a decent series for Marvel during the whole Secret Wars. Mm-hmm. I forget what he was had going on.
Yeah, the last thing he had for me was Crossed, and that was a very violent type of thing, and that kind of gone off the rails and been hit or miss.
Yeah. So very cool. All right, we're already at number two. So what's number two for you?
Number two is, once again, we're back to Image. It's Image and DC on my list. Dan seems to be a lot more spread out between publishers. But I have number two on my list. It's one of my favorites. It was only a mini series. I'm hoping they come back with another little mini series on it soon. And it's from Eric Powell, Eisner Award-winning creator of The Goon, and Tim Weish, a guy who used to be a bricklayer. Comes Big Man Plans, a brutal crime drama with a shocking mystery at its heart. Even the most marginalized in society can exact revenge if they don't care how they do it. Big Man Plans, it was just something I kind of took a chance on because I've read a couple of stuff of The Goon by Eric Powell, and his artwork is phenomenal. I think it's very caricature, but it also has this weird shading going on that he does to the characters, which adds a lot of depth and kind of adds to the realism of the characters. And I just loved the main character of the story and his fight against kind of adversity of being the smallest guy, getting picked on, and then just coming back and kicking a lot of ass and doing a lot of things that you would never expect from a character like this. The artwork is definitely the thing that brings it home for me. And then the story is just this phenomenal thing going on. It doesn't lay back at all. It comes at you with a baseball bat with barbed wire wrapped around it straight to your forehead. It doesn't pull any punches.
That's a good way to explain it, because I've read that series too, and it is brutal yes. For sure. Yeah.
Yes, especially the scenes where he's in the Vietnam War, and he kind of goes into the bunkers of the Viet Cong soldiers' bunkers, the little kind of like hole in the ground, and he goes in and he just kicks ass. Definitely very bloody, very violent. Apparently I like that type of thing, so Big Man Plans made my number two. And like I said, it's only a short little mini series with four comics, but it kind of left me wanting more, so that's kind of what made it so high, what made it get so high on my list.
Yeah, it is like the ultimate revenge porn. If you like those, seeing people getting their comeuppance in the worst way possible, that's definitely a good choice for sure. And I they did leave it open, there's possible, they could bring it back for another series or make it a ongoing, but hopefully we'll see some more from that. Very cool. Again, I would recommend that as well. I enjoyed that quite a bit. Next for me is also coming from Image, and this is a book that I ended up reading because of you, Greg, because you sent me a text of it, and I'm like, you're like, this looks cool. I'm like, you know what, Greg, you're right. That does look cool. And I read it and I loved it. And it's my number two for the year so far. And it's The Fix. Coming from Image, written by Nick Spencer, who is a guy. I just love his style of comedy when it comes to writing. He also does Ant-Man, which I love. It's just, I don't know, it's hard to describe it.
Yeah, it's a very hard to describe a comedy, but it's definitely way funnier than the Ghostbusters movie. He hits it home. And I guess I'll just throw in that actually The Fix is my number one for,
oh,
for
really?
The year. Nice. Yes. So I guess I'll throw in here with you, Dan, but number one is The Fix for me.
Yeah, it's, and for those that don't know, I'll go with the description too. It's a story of crooked cops, scheming mobsters, and corrupt politicians that run things, and sex toy. Wait, sorry.
And the sex toy that can bring them all down.
Yes. Oh, and a hero is a drug sniffling dog. And the hero is a drug sniffling beagle named Pretzels. Bad people do bad things to each other in this frenetic, outrageous, sometimes off putting new caper. If you like classic crimes like Criminal and 100 Bullets, we apologize in advance for letting you down.
And that's kind of the humor that goes on it. They are the worst, terrible cops in existence, and yeah. It's just hilarious.
Yeah, they are, like, it's, you know, those, like, oh, they're bad guys, but still good. Like, I'm thinking of, you know, the Nice Guys movies that came out this year. Yeah, they have, like, no redeeming qualities whatsoever, but somehow it's still really enjoyable. It's, I don't know, it just, it's a comic that takes it, like, to the, like, the highest level, keeps going. You know, it's just, like, you're just wondering, like, okay, what will they do next, these reprehensible people? And you think they would, you know, you would need someone to root for, but it's not really that in a way. I don't know. But
you're rooting for them to just see how far down the rabbit hole they'll go.
Yeah, it's more like, okay, how are they going to get out of this one? Like, how is this going to work?
Yes. Yeah, it's hysterical, violent, hilarious. I love the essentially the main villain that they're going up against, who is like this everyday kind of dorky kind of like dad.
Oh yes.
But he's just randomly comes in and he's like, "Oh, hey, he seems so nice." And then all of a sudden he throws out the most violent kind of suggestion in there that he's going to do, and it's just, that also is freaking hilarious to
me. He's like
a
new age Mr. Rogers with a Dexter,
yes,
death streak in him. Like, he's like, it's like,
the,
you know,
serial killer Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
So good. And it's only up to issue 4, I think, at this point. Yeah. But it was just so good that I had to put it up at the top. Hopefully it doesn't go anywhere downhill at all, because it's just great the way it is so far.
Yeah, I heard really great things about people referring it to the Superior Foes of Spider-Man. Like, it has the same similar tone to that. But I have not read that. Now I want to. But
no, I haven't read that.
It's about like the villains of Spider-Man, so I'll have to check that out. But I would again recommend, if you enjoy that, to check out the Irredeemable Ant-Man, because it's not as to that level, but there's some fun aspects to that too, and just like, it's self-referential. It's like meta without being overly meta. Enough pop culture references, but not overdoing it per se. So I don't know how well it would age, but I've enjoyed it. It's like almost, it almost feels like it should be taking place in the 80s with just the style, but it's present day.
Yeah, especially with the partner and his very like Hawaiian kind of, yeah, florally shirts. Yeah. But it's great. I highly recommend people go out and check out that comic. I seriously sent it to Dan, not knowing a thing, just knowing that he kind of likes noir kind of detective comics.
Yeah.
And this seemed like it was noir, but it's really not. But it was detective comic, and I'm so glad I sent it to you, because I was like, I'll check it out too, and just sent you without even reading it. And I'm glad you would enjoy it and that I enjoy it.
Yeah, it's good. I definitely highly recommend it. So I'll go over my number one, and I have not had a Marvel book, but this is my one Marvel book. It was hard to come up with my number one, to be honest. I'm like, nothing really is over standing out too much. Like, The Hit could easily be my number one. I ended up being coming from an unexpected source, because as a character I've never really cared about all that much, but the series is, I'm just really digging, and it's this current Spider-Woman series. Written by Dennis Hopeless, and it's been written by a few people, but I think the best work has been done by Javier Rodriguez. And it's a Spider-Woman series that covers the character of Jessica Drew. It starts off with her being pregnant, and kind of goes through that, and then she eventually has her kid. But Javier Rodriguez in some of the issues this year were doing things like I never saw done, like his ability to his storytelling in using kind of the comic book panels in new ways was phenomenal. There's the best example was the issue in which she's stuck in this hospital that's taken over by the Skrulls, and she has to do kind of going through all these different floors and whatnot. And the way that he draws, like, how she moves from one location to the next is just, it's, you know, what should be just a normal scene, it's just unbelievable, like, what he was able to do with it. Just his use of space, the creativity he would use, it's just the detail, it's amazing. I would highly recommend checking it out. And then, too, I don't know if it just clicked for me, because then you see, after she has the kid, she kind of goes into this of trying to balance the life of being a mom and being a hero. And it's something that we've seen a lot, but I just felt like it hit with a different type of reality that I didn't expect, bringing up points that I didn't expect. She has this great friendship with Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, and that's been a phenomenal, like, I just like seeing that. And Jessica Drew, it's Spider-Woman, is a character that I typically have never really cared about. Like, I felt like they've tried to make her interesting when New Avengers was first released and trying to make her a major player, but she was always been a character to me that was missing personality and major character traits. Like, I couldn't even give you any, but this to me is just showing how you can take any character and make a great series. And I don't know, I would highly recommend it. I just think it looks beautiful, and it's a really well done story, and superhero comics can go a lot of different directions, but I feel like this is doing something new for a genre that can be stale. So it's my number one for the year so far.
Very cool.
Do you have any other ones that you know, didn't make your list, but you were honorable mentions?
Rumble. It's a very weird comic, but I love the art style it's got going to it. I can't even really describe it. It's more on the cartoonish side. It's got this crazy, like, god. Like gods of old and creatures going on. I've been enjoying that. Low, which didn't start off great for me, but it's been kind of picking up. The stories aren't fabulous. The artwork is tremendous, though. Marvel hasn't been really sticking out to me. I want to say Batman, but I feel like towards the end of his run, Scott Snyder kind of fell down a little bit with everything. I really liked the Court of Owls and the whole death of family situation going on. Do you have any, Dan, while I think
sure.
a little bit more?
Well, speaking of Marvel, I do have some Marvel series that almost made it. It was very hard to leave off Vision, the new series. It's great. The more I thought about them, the more I felt like it should be on there. And maybe when I do my end of the year list, it will be. But that is just one oddball comic in the best way possible. It feels like a Twilight Zone made in with it feels like a Twilight episode that is just off its rails, but still somehow, I don't know, it's just twisted and amazing. Like, I don't, it's the fact that Tom King was able to do what he was doing with that series is still boggles my mind, but I ended up loving it quite a deal. Power Man and Iron Fist, which is just a real fun series.
I've seen that one. I've never picked it up, though. The covers look really cool.
Very throwbackish, you know. Kind of, it's very cartoonish in a good way. I got Squirrel Girl, like I mentioned. Howard the Duck. All New Wolverine, I've enjoyed.
That's been pretty good.
Also, I know you weren't a huge fan of it, but I still really love Old Man Logan. I've enjoyed
it. It started off really good. I feel like it's been petering out lately. But yeah, Old Man Logan would have been on there if it didn't start to peter out a little bit, I felt like.
Yeah, I am 3 issues behind with that, so that might be why I have a higher feeling of it.
Are you still on his revenge list spree?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, yeah, it kind of fell down a little bit after that for me. Others, for me, a bunch of DC stuff like Batman Beyond was really cool. Bernard Chang had this really cool art style for the Batman Beyond suit, and it's not what's his name in it, Terry McGinnis. It is actually Red Robin from this timeline. Definitely a cool kind of what if scenario of like this weird different timeline dimension kind of stuff going on. It was very cool. Black Canary had an awesome art style, very punk rock feel to it, with Black Canary going around with their band. I don't know. I felt the story fell a little bit short to make it on the list. I'm still trying to think of stuff from Marvel. Marvel, I felt like, just kind of sat at average for me. I really liked this whole the Kingpin comic that came out recently, but there's only been the first issue of that.
Have you read the new Daredevil? I've enjoyed that a lot. I've enjoyed
Daredevil has never really been a top character for me. Yeah. I've read a couple when Mark Waid kind of was starting up with it, and I thought that was really good. I got that for cheap at the Baltimore Con last year. I thought that was really good. I haven't picked up any single issues of that or anything. I've been mostly reading X-Men. Thunderbolts is kind of interesting so far, but it's not really hitting home for me quite yet. I'm still giving it chances. There's nothing like just spectacular standout-y from Marvel at this point with their comics for me. I've been mostly going to Image and to DC, so I've been kind of switching sides. I feel bad for it, but
I think there's I didn't mention it, but Doctor Strange, I think, has also been really good for me. And the Thor, Mighty Thor. Anything really Jason Aaron. Even anything like Jason Aaron, really. He has, like I mentioned, Southern Bastards. And also this series, The Goddamned, which is like a pre-apocalyptic. It takes place in biblical times. Oh, I just feel dirty reading it. It's just so grimy. And it's good. It's like I said, it's a setting you don't see used very often, which is why I've enjoyed it a lot. And Jason Aaron's style, which I don't know, he might be my favorite writer going today, with his his vast amount of great comics he has out right now. But
also on that should be mentioned is anything by Brian K. Vaughan. He didn't really make the list for me for anything. Saga's been out for a while now. I think we all know that we love that one. Haven't really read any of the single issues. I've been collecting the graphic novels, and I'm a bit behind on it. That's why it really didn't make my list. Been keeping up on Paper Girls. I don't think it's quite as successful or interesting as Saga, but still really great to read. So anything by Brian K. Vaughan is really great. It just, there was some other stuff on there that was really hitting that that spot for me.
Yeah. Same thing with me with Saga. I feel like I could probably put that at number one every year, but similar, I'm not caught up with that. I also didn't include Deadly Class, which is a series I love, but I've been moving to trade with that, and East of West. Which is, that series is amazing. It's just, that needs to be a TV series now, or a cartoon or something. I just feels like it. Again, Jonathan Hickman, another great one. I call him, I feel like he's the Christopher Nolan of comic books. Makes these epics that are something like Secret Wars, but are so still thematically rich. He can take something that could be a blockbuster, but make it into something that actually is relatively meaningful. So. Yeah, there's a lot probably that I'm also missing that I should be talking about, but there's a lot. I think that overall, there's always a lot of great comics. I love seeing that with more digital comics, and we're getting more
Images pushing out title after title.
Yeah, every week I feel like they have a new really great number one. So, and I haven't talked about Valiant at all, but Valiant's been killing it. They have a new series, their new summer event going on, and Bloodshot Reborn, which has been great. I would, if you're not enjoying Wolverine, it's kind of a good go-to between Wolverine and the Punisher. So, I don't know. Anything else before we...
And then you've also been on Archie Comics lately.
Yeah, Archie's been really good. I'm behind. I haven't really caught up with any this year. I've been kind of binging on that. I let them collect and then usually read a good five or six in a row or so. So, but... All right. Anything else before we bring this episode to a close?
No. I think we're for the two of us, we put out a lot of content there.
Yeah. So, all right. So we'll be back. So, but yeah, that'll be it for this week. We'll be interested in hearing what you have to say, you know, what for your comic readers out there. What have you enjoyed so far this year? You know, is there anything we should have mentioned and didn't? You can let us know in a number of different ways. Best way to go is to go to geekcastradio.com, comment on an episode post. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Just search Talking in Circles, BCRN. Greg, you're also on Twitter. What is your Twitter name?
I am at The Create Forge, and Chuck is at Heroic Age Chuck. Why don't you go friend him and ask him what his favorite comics are and find out what interested him.
Yeah, definitely. We'll see. Maybe we'll get his take on it when he comes back next week. He's on special assignment this week, so he's on a special mission. No one knows. I don't know. But anyways, all right. But yeah, so that'll be it for this week. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel, same podcast feed. But for now,
this has been Greg or Chuck with a mustache and beard,
and this has been Dan, and we've been talking in a smaller circle. And we'll see you next week.
Essentially a line, 2 points.
Really, yeah. Talking in line. Doesn't have the same reason.
No, it doesn't. And then plus, if you're in a line at a comic book convention, like Comic-Con's going on. I had a guy there 1 year that wouldn't leave me the hell alone.
Yeah, sounds like Comic-Con. Yeah, sounds like a convention for sure.
Yeah, comic book hell.
That you get to pay for and spend years going to. So. Years, yes. Very important.